about 20% of a full one. In The Wisdom of the Bones, Alan Walker recounts how he once asked Johansson how he had come up with a figure of 40%. Johansson breezily replied that he had discounted the 106 bones of the hands and feet, more than half the body's total, and a fairly important half too, one would have thought, since Lucy's principal defining attribute was the use of those hands and feet to deal with a changing world. At all events, rather less is known about Lucy than is generally supposed. It isn't even actually known that she was a female. Her sex is merely presumed from her diminutive size. 2 years after Lucy's discovery, at Letoli in Tanzania, Mary Leakey found footprints left by two individuals from, it is thought, the same family of hominids. The prints had been made when two Australopithecines had walked through muddy ash following a volcanic eruption. The ash had later hardened, preserving the impressions of their feet for a distance of over 23 meters. The American Museum of Natural History in New York has an absorbing diorama that records the moment of their passing. It depicts life-sized recreations of a male and a female walking side by side across the ancient African plain. They are hairy and chimp-like in dimensions, but have a bearing and gait that suggests humanness. The most striking feature of the display is that the male holds his left arm protectively around the female's shoulder. It is a tender and affecting gesture, suggestive of close bonding. The tableau is done with such conviction that it is easy to overlook the consideration that virtually everything above the footprints is imaginary. Almost every external aspect of the two figures, degree of hairiness, facial appendages, whether they had human noses or chimp noses, expressions, skin color, size and shape of the female's breasts, is necessarily suppositional. We can't even say that they were a couple. The female figure may in fact have been a child. Nor can we be certain that they were Australopithecines. They are assumed to be Australopithecines because there are no other known candidates. I had been told that they were posed like that because during the building of the diorama, the female figure kept toppling over. But Ian Tattersall insists with a laugh that the story is untrue. Obviously, we don't know whether the male had his arm around the female or not, but we do know from the stride measurements that they were walking side by side and close together, close enough to be touching. It was quite an exposed area, so they were probably feeling vulnerable. That's why we tried to give them slightly worried expressions. I asked him if he was troubled about the amount of license that was taken in reconstructing the figures. "It's always a problem in making recreations," he agreed, readily enough. "You wouldn't believe how much discussion can go into deciding details like whether Neanderthals had eyebrows or not. It was just the same for the Letoli figures. We simply can't know the details of what they looked like, but we can convey their size and posture and make some reasonable assumptions about their probable appearance. If I had to do it again, I think I might have made them just slightly more ape-like and less human. These creatures weren't humans. They were bipedal apes." Until very recently, it was assumed that we were descended from Lucy and the Letoli creatures, but now many authorities aren't so sure. Although certain physical features, the teeth for instance, suggest a possible link between us, other parts of the Australopithecine anatomy are more troubling. In their book, Extinct Humans, Tattersall and Schwartz point out that the upper portion of the human femur is very like that of the apes, but not of the Australopithecines. So if Lucy is in a direct line between apes and modern humans, it means we must have adopted an Australopithecine femur for a million years or so, then gone back to an ape femur when we moved on to the next phase of our development. They believe, in fact, that not only was Lucy not our ancestor, she wasn't even much of a walker. "Lucy and her kind did not locomote in anything like the modern human fashion," insists Tattersall. "Only when these hominids had to travel between arboreal habitats would they find themselves walking bipedally, forced to do so by their own anatomies." Johansson doesn't accept this. "Lucy's hips and the muscular arrangement of her pelvis," he has written, "would have made it as hard for her to climb trees as it is for modern humans." Matters grew murkier still in 2001 and 2002, when four exceptional new specimens were found. One, discovered by Meave Leakey of the famous fossil-hunting family at Lake Turkana in Kenya and called Kenyanthropus platyops, Kenyan flatface, is from about the same time as Lucy, and raises the possibility that it was our ancestor and Lucy was an unsuccessful side branch. Also found in 2001, Rhadopithecus ramidus cadaver, dated at between 5.2 million and 5.8 million years old, and Ororin tugenensis, thought to be 6 million years old, making it the oldest hominid yet found, but only for a brief while. In the summer of 2002, a French team working in the Jurab Desert of Chad, an area that had never before yielded ancient bones, found a hominid almost 7 million years old, which they labeled Sahelanthropus chadensis. Some critics believe that it was not human, but an early ape, and therefore should be called Sahelpithecus. All these were early creatures and quite primitive, but they walked upright, and they were doing so far earlier than previously thought. Bipedalism is a demanding and risky strategy. It means refashioning the pelvis into a full load-bearing instrument. To preserve the required strength, the birth canal must be comparatively narrow. This has two very significant immediate consequences and one longer-term one. First, it means a lot of pain for any birthing mother and a greatly increased danger of fatality to mother and baby both. Moreover, to get the baby's head through such a tight space, it must be born while its brain is still small and while the baby, therefore, is still helpless. This means long-term infant care, which in turn implies solid male-female bonding. All this is problematic enough when you are the intellectual master of the planet, but when you are a small, vulnerable Australopithecine with a brain about the size of an orange, the risk must have been enormous. Absolute brain size does not tell you everything, or possibly sometimes even much. Elephants and whales both have brains larger than ours, but you wouldn't have much trouble outwitting them in contract negotiations. It is relative size that matters, a point that is often overlooked. As Gould notes, A. africanus had a brain of only 450 cubic centimeters, smaller than that of a gorilla. But a typical africanus male weighed less than 100 pounds, and a female much less still, whereas gorillas can easily top out at 600 pounds.